Is education the new punk rock? What's going on in Denver? And are we already seeing the midterm elections' effect on education? Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker, Dean of Education at Edgewood College, and Dr. Jed Hopkins, Associate Professor of Education at Edgewood College.
Here's what stories are trending in education news.
Number one.
Midterm elections, disaster for public education across the country. People say, why? Well, because Republicans stormed off and won. However, let's be honest, not that Democrats positioned themselves as friends of public education. I have one story that I think highlights what we're about to witness. Wisconsin, yeah. Senator Voss, yeah. Warning to the University of Wisconsin, if you're not doing your teaching, you better be doing research about the economy and how to build a better economy. And I'm going to paraphrase this quote. We're not going to be studying the ancient mating rituals of anything at the UW. Okay? Economy or nothing.
That's the only kind of research there is.
I'm just disappointed in the fact that my children are going to be denied the ability to learn about ancient mating rituals of all kinds of things. I mean, think about that loss there.
But I mean, seriously, right?
I thought about that going, okay, look, I'm a brand new scholar. I'm coming out of Harvard, and UW-Madison is considered a research institution flagship, right? And I would love to move to Madison, except now I've just found out that we've got a legislature there that has said, we don't want academics.
Right. There is a research agenda.
The government now is dictating the research agenda of a public institution.
Yeah.
That's the result of the midterm election that I think most people aren't thinking about. This is bad.
Yeah.
When you have legislators who are not afraid to be quoted, literally come out and say, look, economy, research, that's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
You come in here and do any of that kind of humanities type of research, we don't want you.
Yeah. Academic freedom, what's that?
The attack on academic freedom, the attack on public schools, the attack on learning.
We don't want no academic freedom.
Number two.
Secretary of Education Arne Duncan came out again and said, look, teacher education programs, you must be part of the solution to the achievement gap. In fact, we're going to rank you according to your graduates' ability to go out and teach children and bring their test scores up. So in other words, Jed Hopkins, that freshman who's in your class that's wanting to be a teacher,
right,
when they get out there and start teaching, they better bring up test scores of kids, or else guess what, Jed? We're coming after you, buddy.
The distance between our work and that test result.
My own son, Luke, who's in eighth grade, his test score on his English test is now the responsibility of the college professor who taught his English teacher. It's now their fault that Luke didn't understand the difference between a prepositional phrase and a dangling participle. Arne Duncan coming after teacher educators. You know, this is one of those times, Jed, where I would look around and I scratch my head and say, I wonder what Matt Damon's mom would say.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
You know, a big problem here is that Arne Duncan's not an educator.
Yeah.
He doesn't have an education background. You know, Linda Darling-Hammond was the, you know, led the Obama's first transition team. And we need a Secretary of Education like her, someone with a background in education who actually knows. Oh, I just want to start swearing right now, because we need someone who knows something.
Right.
Because this is the whole problem. All the education policies are coming down from the top from people who don't know the field.
They don't
know anything. Don't you want to say a really raunchy swear word? Because they don't have any background, they don't have any knowledge, they have no knowledge base, and so it's all opinion.
You can always say that word because we can use a beeper sound.
Oh, you can beep it out?
Yeah.
Oh, good, because it just flows sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, let it flow. That's
okay.
Fine.
Good. Glad. Good to know. I forgot about the beeper.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
What would Matt Damon's mom say? How in the world did you get roped into being part of a segment called What Would Matt Damon's Mom Say?
Well, do you know that as soon as I heard this idea, I thought it was really funny. Your humor has always reminded me of the humor of my two sons. So I feel this strange familiarity with you.
Okay.
And, you know, I was a single mom. I brought up two boys. The household was full of just hilarity all the time. They're both very, very funny. They still are. So the kind of humor that you have, I always resonated with really quickly. And so the idea of what would Matt Damon's mother say struck my funny bone. But also, I thought it was an interesting way to use Matt's celebrity for a good purpose, which I think he's done a great job doing. But I thought that we could use it that way too. And sometimes, you know, and it's an interesting twist. It's like a funny twist on celebrity, and sort of there's an irony in there, and I appreciate that, and yet people kind of perk up when they hear the names of celebrities, unfortunately, but that's the way things are. And because the radio show is very clever, the radio show that you're designing, and fast-moving, and hopefully going to reach people outside of just the limited few that might totally nod their heads when they hear what we say.
Right.
And I thought that this segment could be one that would make people listen up who might otherwise not be listening. And I care mostly about getting these ideas out to a broader audience.
Right. So you're not worried about the fact that, you know, this is Matt Damon's mom as opposed to Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, who you really are, you know, noted author, professor, amazing person who's already done their work in education and is truly the educator advocate. There's no we're okay milking the Matt Damon's mom part.
Yeah, maybe if I didn't have a secure career and identity and sense of self around my work in the world, maybe
right.
I would feel differently about it. But I think the humor kicks in just because I don't have any of that sense of insecurity around who I really am.
Well, you know, and so some background, though, for people. You're a PhD. You're emeritus professor, correct, from Lesley University now. Okay, published many books, early childhood education. But I think the connection between Nancy Carlson Page and Matt Damon's mom really came into big focus, you know, was it 3 or 4 years ago at the Save Our Schools rally that summer, that July in Washington, D.C., when you got to introduce Matt as the speaker there. And I think that's what really kind of created this, oh, wait, so Matt Damon's mom, who's an educator, but Matt also is an education activist because he came and spoke.
He is a very informed citizen about public education issues, and I send him a lot of things that I read, that I send on, and he knows a lot, and he's passionate about the core issues around public education, what it means to a democracy, what it means to have an institution that really would be committed to equal education for every child in the country, what that would look like and how that's not what's happening now. He understands all that a lot, and we talk about it. So it's very interesting to share these ideas with him.
We should be talking to you anyway, though, because, again, you're Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. You're a lifelong educator. What you say about education actually matters. In one way, what Matt says is interesting, and it's great that he's a celebrity, and we love that he supports us, but it's really you that matter. How did you start?
Right after I started, and when I went to graduate school, I started graduate school in around 1970, and it was such an amazing time to go into education, and there were many people like myself. Being a generation younger, it would be hard for you to imagine what the climate was like then, but it was a time of the Great Society, the War on Poverty. Everyone out in the air was talking about equality, poverty, you know, programs to equalize the economic inequalities that we had in the country, and along with that, there was a lot of discussion about equity in education, segregation, equal educational opportunity for every child. It was a really thrilling time. So I think I had a natural inclination to education, but I went into the field, like so many other young people at the time, thinking that I could really make a difference, a positive difference in the world by going into this field that looked like it was really one that was moving in the direction of opening up opportunities for all kids in the country. I mean, it's become the reverse of that, but at the time, that's what my motivation was. It was very inspiring and thrilling to go into education.
What point did you decide that, you know what, I think I'm going to really make this truly a profession and a career and move, you know, into the PhD and become, you know, an early childhood specialist? I mean, what was the driving force there?
Well, it was actually in a very organic process. You know, a lot of people talk to me about, like, I've got to choose a profession, I've got to make a choice. It never felt that way to me. I entered the way that I just described, very idealistic, like so many young people. But again, the climate was one that really was fostering idealism at that time. I don't see that for young people today at all.
And yeah, and
much
that's
harder
a
time.
Right.
I feel really sad about that for this generation, because it's a lot harder to find your way if you don't sort of see higher purposes and things that you're
sure.
doing. And the kind of language we have now of accountability and data and management and evaluation, it's so uninspiring, and it's even scary. I mean, who wants to go into a field where you feel like now in Massachusetts your license might be removed if you don't get high test scores? I mean, it couldn't be more different. But at the time that I went in, every step that I took towards more involvement in being a really committed educator led me there. It evolved, and it was very organic. And I loved it, and also it fit for me. Sometimes you try something out in life, you might think it's a good idea, but it doesn't. Like me, I'm trying painting right now. I think it's not such a good fit. I'm not such a good painter. But
There's always paint by numbers.
I know. You know what? That's what I've got to do. Just down to the art store and get some numbers.
Right.
Because it probably ended up looking pretty darn good. But it fit. It fit. I mean, I loved doing it, and then the feedback I got from the people I was teaching was really positive. So it felt right. So I kept going. And at one point, I felt like I wanted to get a doctorate earlier than I did, but I was a single mom, and I couldn't have fit it in. And so as soon as Matt – actually, I got it quite late. As soon as Matt left for his freshman year at Harvard, mm-hmm. which – never did turn into a senior year at Harvard, but his freshman year, I had enough space in my life to start school.
That was Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, educator, author, emeritus professor, and Matt Damon's mom. Now, we can look forward to many more appearances in shows in the future, because What Would Matt Damon's Mom Say is a regular segment on Busted Pencils Radio.
This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils.
From being the drummer in Public Image Limited, Nine Inch Nails, and Ministry, to lecturing in China, teaching in Chicago, to writing books. To say his career has been diverse is an understatement. Our guest this week, musician, author, and educator, Martin Atkins. Welcome to the show, Martin. Hey, listen, I first heard about you when I was reading this piece by Hugo Berman, in which he explained that his friend Martin Atkins is selling a shirt that says education is the next punk rock. I love that statement. How did you come up with that?
I think that, you know, I teach a class on punk. We look at music genres, and I show students my appalling report card from when I was a kid a few years before punk rock started. The English version, anyway. And, you know, and throughout that lecture, and it's evolved over the last several years, we're talking about, like, what are punk values? And I think it's, you know, jump in at the deep end. Here's a call, here's another, now start a band, which actually, you know, I think might have come from Woody Guthrie originally. Three chords are too many. But the other punk idea was to question everything, not to accept you know, what is told to you as being fact, to investigate things for yourself and make things happen. And that's all I've tried to do since I've gotten into education, is take a kind of a punk rock view of what's happening, question everything, and put syllabi in a blender, put methods in a blender, and, you know, as you're seeing the results, is try and sloganize my efforts in T-shirt form. You know, that there's a bunch of ideas I have, you know, if in doubt, make it real. You know, it's easy in the classroom to look at an example with a built-in exam and the back pages. The questions are already done, and you've been doing it for years, so it's easy to do it again, but that's not always the best result. So, you know, I kind of treat the classroom like it's a gig, and I look at my lectures like a set list, because if you don't view the classroom as theater, you lose students' attention. You know, just last week, I was at Lincoln Park High School lecturing to 16-year-olds in a program, which then, I think my Facebook activity about that precipitated a school in Akron to call me. They just had their music business program cut and asked me if I would go and speak to their 15 students. And, of course, they don't have a budget. And, you know, I don't particularly care. I'm happy to, you know, when I'm on the road, stop off and talk to anybody about anything. So I think that's how I'm punk rocking it. It's not looking for a change in the system. I'm just going straight to the kids and doing it.
Cool. I got to say, Martin, I just love the way the connections you're making here. And I've always thought of punk rock as being an incredibly hopeful thing. You know, it's a kind of a phenomena that grows out of despair. But basically, it's very hopeful. It has a very much of a we can do anything kind of attitude to it.
Yeah, and it's you sound like you grew up in the UK, Jed.
Yeah. So it's refreshing to talk to someone who can understand me.
Well, and I mean, you know, it's weird. It's strange when I do my punk lecture and I talk to kids about punk, and, you know, one of the students was sitting in the audience with a Ramones T-shirt, not understanding what it meant. You know, like, you know, that's the band. I'm like, I'm pleased you wore that shirt today to support me. And they're like, what?
But it's incredibly hopeful, and we need that, man. We really need that.
It led me to do a lot. You know, I'm finishing up my third book. You know, I started my own record label in a recording studio, and it wasn't because I knew I could do a better job. It was because I knew I couldn't do any worse than had been done to me by supposed successful labels, independent and major, on my behalf. And sometimes I sit and think, especially when I see Johnny Rotten just going through the motions a little bit these days, but, you know, what did punk teach me? And it just gave me this attitude of like, well, let's have a go. Let's just do it. What could possibly go wrong? And, you know, that's not to say we don't think anything can go wrong. We just know that we'll deal with it when it inevitably the ceiling crashes down around our head.
It's like progressive education, Dewey, the idea of getting in there and letting the kids explore and have an opportunity to make a mess and get into the institution of learning. When you're talking about truly getting into learning and progressive, it feels punk rock. And I was wondering if there was any type of, you know, if you've gone that far in thinking about it, or if it's more located just in the idea of how you approach music.
No. I'm doing it. I started off teaching by accident 14 years ago. I wrote a book because there wasn't one for the class I was teaching. Now I'm the music business department chair at SAE Chicago. I just got my bachelor's degree, which is like the ultimate punk thing to do. I'm like, well, I'm tired of fighting this, you know, 5 years ago. And I just, you know, got on my bachelor's track part-time. And so now that's out of the way. But what I'm doing in the classroom, first of all, is we redesigned the classroom. My classroom has got couches and trees and Christmas tree lights and artwork on the walls. And it's like, hold on a minute. These couches are really comfortable. Anybody teaching in this room had better be on their game. Otherwise, you might as well hand out blankets and pillows. You know? So, and I started to look at what's happening in the classroom. We're flipping a couple of classes, and it's fantastic. So, I mean, I love teaching. I love lecturing. My slides are irreverent and funny, and I ad-lib, and we have a great time. So it was difficult for me to give up some of my lecturing, but there are lectures like the ins and outs of a music business contract, and record royalty calculations. Right, so I used to deliver my lecture, and then here's 10 problems, go home and solve these problems. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the next week, inevitably, people are like, look, I did two. I just want to give up. I want to kill myself. This is horrifying. You know, yeah. I'm like, yeah, but it was a lecture, you know. So now that lecture, we're in the process of putting that online. Mm-hmm. So students can watch that at their own pace at 4 in the morning or 2 in the afternoon. Yeah. And that's important. That's choice, and that's important. Yeah. And just as importantly, they can check their Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat in the middle. They can pause, rewind. They can, you know, go through the bits they know, rewind and watch the bits they don't know again and again the same night or the following day or 2 weeks down the line. And then in class, instead of me being incredibly funny and engaging, you know, I help them with the problems that we set them. Yeah. And so you're applying the most force at the weakest link in the chain or some equation thing, right, where I can see the students, I can see their faces screw up into a ball. I'm like, hey, what are you having a problem with? Yeah. You know, and I can just flip from student to student. And if I see that three people are having the same problem, like, okay, everybody heads up. Everybody seems to be having a problem with this. Let's go through it together. And you can see the relief on the students' faces. And, you know, I don't need to deliver my record label contract lecture for the 50th time. Yeah. Although some of those things are changing, but that's the flipping of the classroom. The other thing, I've taken it a step further than that, just in terms of a guideline. I find that professionals in the field, except me because I don't care, whatever, professionals in the field think that everybody has to have the basics before you can jump in the deep end. You know, so when students are their most open and willing to be impressed, that's when you sit them down and go, here we go, here's 50 terms that you have to know before you can do anything.
Right.
Before you can touch this camera, which is amazing, there's a green screen over there, we can make it look like you're riding on the back of a frog. Before we do that, let's learn all these terms. Mm-hmm. Shotage, mise en film, shooting the shot. Whatever. And you just lose. You literally and figuratively lose people. So I have this T-shirt slogan philosophy: fireworks week one, formula for gunpowder week five. You know,
That is so punk rock.
you walk in the classroom and set off the fireworks. Everybody's like, oh my goodness, I like the blue one. I like the one that went up in the air. What makes it do that? Week five, we'll get into that.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it is that. This is the attitude of punk, isn't it? This is like, we can do it. We can do anything, and of course you can't. But you find out a lot of stuff on the way, and eventually you can, right?
Right.
More from Martin Atkins on the way. Plus, you have to hear what a mother in Denver is going through in her fight to save her children's school in our Activists of the Week segment, and our tribute to Howard Zinn, all coming up. We will crown our Education Activists of the Week in a bit. Now, more with our special guest, punk rocker, author, and educator, Martin Atkins. Martin, you talked about approaching teaching like you would approach being in a band and being on stage. Can you give us an example of your approach at work in the classroom?
I took this experimental approach to the copyright class, right? So, and there's a problem right there. Thinking of my semester as a set list, you know, here we go. Everybody's in the building. The club is packed. What are we going to do? Intro to copyright. It's like, oh, no, you know. So this was my first week experiment in my new program. I said, you know what, kids? Screw it. screw copyright. Who cares? No, I don't care. I don't care. There's a guy called Girl Talk. He does these 60-minute sample-laden albums that are, he's just trampling on the copyrights of everything. He should be sued, but he hasn't been. Let's listen to what he's doing. Isn't it amazing? And screw copyright. And my plan all along was to keep doing this. And week four, maybe sit them down and say, hey, guys, you know I've been saying screw copyright. It's been a lot of fun, but I can't do that. Mm-hmm. We actually need to learn about it.
Yeah.
Well, week three, and this is why I love this stuff, week three, well, the end of week two, a couple of students said, well, you keep saying screw copyright. We don't even know what it is yet. And I'm like, yeah, well, yay, let's listen to another track, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anarchy, it was week three that there was like a student revolt. They're like, look, Mr. Atkins, you keep saying screw this and screw that. We heard about Girl Talk. We looked at copyright in Europe and South Africa, because we have a campus in South Africa. I thought it would be fun to look at that. We looked at copyright in China, where I went off the rails, and there's a whole Apple store, a counterfeit Apple store. It's hilarious.
Yes.
And they said, we need to know about copyright. You've got to teach us about copyright.
Yeah.
And I was just like, boom.
Well, that's it. Now they're ready to learn. And so that's teaching and learning at its punk rock most powerful. Why is that not happening in American K-12 schools right now? In fact, I would say the opposite we see going forward now. You know, here's what you have to learn. You have to learn it by now. We're going to measure it on this continuum or on this type of, device. And we're going to continue to move on. And we're going to make sure that you know this, and if you don't know this, we're coming after your teachers or we're coming after their principals. I mean, which is so not learning.
I think over the last few years, but now especially, it feels like we're just, I mean, maybe you guys have been banging on this door for 10 years, and if you have, I apologize, but it feels like there's just starting to be some momentum built now where, you know, I pick up little bits here and there. Like, I think in Norway, they don't care about anything. They just let the kids loose in the forest with shapes. The shapes happen to be letters, but they're encouraged to play with these shapes. And whilst in the first 3 or 4 years, they test behind American students, after 3 or 4 years of kindergarten and whatever comes after that, the first couple of years, after those first 4 years, they steam way ahead of American students.
Right,
so
right.
I think we're just starting to exchange information about what works and what doesn't, and what is learning and what isn't. And you know, that can start as us just looking at China and going, what are they doing? You know, just memorizing everything is so crazy. And once you start to, even if you're looking down your noses at the way they teach, at least you're thinking about teaching methods. And you can look and see what works.
Right.
I'm reading now, and I think I am exactly what I would want to have in a student, someone with their curiosity inspired and their head on fire. And so I'm reading about metacognition, and if you can teach students about how they might learn and use a metaphor of a car, for instance, like so, they start to think about themselves and how they learn, that helps them. They can think about, wow, I better put on the brakes and go carefully here over this dangerous terrain.
What I love about the way you're talking about all this is that in true punk rock style, you're improvisatory. You're taking whatever is useful. You know, so you're looking at these theories and you're saying, you know what, we can learn from that. Well, this is cool. This throws some light on it. And in true punk rock style, not one of those things is the answer, right?
Right.
That's really important, right? Because that is the punk rock thing. Not one way is the way.
And all of these students, they're all completely different.
Right.
You know, so the other thing, you know, it's easy to talk about choice, but I try and there are so many options out there to help you set students' heads on fire. So,
it sounds like your head's on fire.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No, but truly, right? Yeah. I mean that, and that has to happen. That has to be that way, right? If teachers are getting burnt out and exhausted, and, you know, that's
not going to. I get it. I mean, I think that the blessing of my life is that coming up through punk first, being in the music business with a record label and a studio and touring, you know, and watching, you know, watching people say, oh, there'll always be record stores. I'm thinking, I don't think there will, actually. You know, so yeah. We've been through chaos and surfed on top of chaos. So change, I'm okay with it, right? Yeah. And so when I started to teach social media kind of on accident, some people in Canada asked me to do a social media mindset class. So I started to teach it, and then it became the beginning of a 16-week class that we did up in Madison, Madison Institute. And, you know, that class changed almost by, as soon as you finish the last slide of a lecture, it's time to go back and redo the first one. So I feel like I'm always on my feet. And I understand that, you know, if you're teaching a subject, you know, Shakespeare or whatever, you know, it's tough to feel the need to change that stuff up. But you know, if you're not communicating with your students in a different way, you're going to lose them. So my advanced entrepreneurship class, you know, we look at traditional business. I also look at it as an opportunity to go and look at environmental issues and all these different aspects of business. Robert Greene, he's done a bunch of business books that you'll find at the airport. He became fascinated by 50 Cent, the rapper, who was shot 9 times before the release of his debut album. Like, what a bummer, you know.
Yeah.
and I thought, this is great. I'm going to get this book. Yeah. Well, the book is laid out like a Bible, you know, just heavy text, lots of text. I thought, well, we've got a problem here with my students. Well, it turns out there's an audio book, and magically, 50 Cent makes a few cameo appearances, just enough to keep students on a long van ride. You know, yeah, you know, keep them entertained for a little bit and then deal with whatever Robert Greene is saying. But then a level above that, I forget the name of the comic book company, but they made a comic book of the Robert Greene 50 Cent business book. So imagine, you know, my students don't love reading. I love reading. I don't have the time to read as much as I would like. They just don't love reading. They haven't grown up in that place.
Right.
But to assign a reading homework assignment, 69-page book, I was a hero.
Yeah.
Like, and here's the book. You know, as long as you are always looking to, this, you know, once you start to see there are different ways of doing things and there's all kinds of software out there, and the classroom needs to be a place of entertainment, then... And finding ways to experiment. I do a lecture on my trip to China. We look at some punk bands and different instruments. It can be a studio lecture or a culture-based lecture. I bring this huge box with 20 different kinds of candy in there. And halfway through the lecture, I said, what better way to come to grips with Chinese culture than through their candy? If I'd lost any of them, I got them back now. And the candy goes from amazing to like some kind of coffee bean based accelerant to some lime peel candy that may or may not be soap.
You know, you talk about this from what we know. You know, say John Dewey, the founder, our experiential democratic critical education part. You know, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, yeah, Sheila was a punk rocker. Now, was John Dewey a punk rocker too? And you know, there's a new T-shirt for you, Martin.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on the show. Really enjoyed it. In fact, it was too quick, and would like to invite you back for a round two here, maybe in a couple weeks.
Love to do that.
Fantastic.
And I want to thank you because, you know, I don't know anything about teaching. I'm bumbling around, you know, coming up with my T-shirts and my ideas. And I'd love to sit and chat with you. And thank you for taking the time to reach out and chat with me. I really appreciate it.
Martin Atkins. Follow him on Facebook or Twitter. Do not go to martinatkins.net, however. That is the homepage for a professional dart player. Now, Jed, what about Martin's philosophy of education being the next punk rock?
Tremendous.
The whole idea of education, punk rock, how do they go together? If you look at the past 15 years and you look at what's been done to the public system particularly, the idea of canned, prepackaged, glitzy, glamorous mm-hmm. curriculum mm-hmm. requires no thought, nothing about it. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like, you know, the idea of music in the 70s at that time when mm-hmm. punk decided to say, wait a minute,
yeah.
no way.
Right.
You know, so here we are, and I'm sitting yeah. there saying, what's the cure right now for American public education? The cure is Martin Atkins and the whole idea of taking education at the public sense and turning it into punk rock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like teaching has become like a system.
Right.
And what do you do with a system? You manage it. But teaching isn't a system. It's a practice. It's a practice that involves risk, creativity, receptiveness, attention to the students' dispositions. It's not prepackaged, and punk gets that, and it's a refreshment. You know, when punk comes along, it's like it comes along at the right moment. It's timely. It's like saying, we need to refresh this.
Okay, so Martin himself has made a great case, and, you know, here's a punk rock drummer. He's doing punk rock stuff because he's an educator. He's like, look, this is the way you get at kids. He gets it.
He gets it.
Does the American public, do people right now in charge of American public education understand that punk rock is knocking at the door? We have the most unimaginative, boring education yeah. system. It's establishment education.
I mean, the thing about punk rock is it's a moral thing. It's restoring the integrity that makes life worthwhile. It's the opposite of stale.
We're going to be out of tune, even on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay if you were there or mm-hmm. if you were playing punk rock. Mm-hmm. The idea was is that together it was an experience,
yeah.
right? So whether you're a teacher or whether you're a student, if you're a punk rocker, or if you're a musician who's a punk rocker, it was an experience that was mm-hmm. built together.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what we should be doing yeah. in today's classrooms?
Yeah, punk rock says yes.
Yeah.
It says yes.
Teacher
yeah.
and learner, this yeah. is an experience that yeah. we have to have together. It has to be powerful,
yeah.
transformational. It has to be painful sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, painful, but yet joyful
right.
at the exact same time.
Right.
Because you come out of the other end and you sit there and go, wow, that was something I've never experienced before in my life. Very much unlike what we can do right now. Today, the American fifth grade classroom, right now, you mm-hmm. can walk in. It's a formulaic
mm-hmm.
day.
So, I mean, yeah, punk rock is about being truthful. It's about looking at the kids and saying, you know what, maybe these kids are bored and I've got a responsibility here. Very receptive to the way students are being in the classroom and recognizing that sometimes we get it wrong. You know, his piece about the environment being too comfortable, you know.
Well, I love that. I mean, he's,
yeah.
in one way, he sets up his own environment that,
yeah.
that in one way is very receptive to learning,
yeah.
but is also very receptive to the fact that if he becomes boring,
yeah.
if he becomes produced,
right.
if he becomes, you know, kind of predictable,
right.
they're sitting in these comfy chairs.
Yeah.
They've got nice lighting around them.
Yeah.
And as soon as you, as the teacher, become predictable, boring, and corporate, your students are going to bed. As a punk rock teacher, I can't allow that to happen.
Exactly.
And so I've got to be on my toes.
Yeah.
I've got to be reimagining every time
yeah.
I stand
yeah.
in front of this classroom what it means to teach. And then you've got to imagine what it's like to be a learner.
Yeah.
We've forgotten that
right.
in today's prepackaged,
right.
canned curriculum,
right.
accountability.
Right.
There's nothing surprising. We're not asking for an end to the American public education system. In fact, we're saying the system itself can be used. We need to just get in there and punk it up a bit.
This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils.
Imagine a school district that pushes for these so-called reform efforts, you know, a voucher program, shutting out the teachers' union, swapping a traditional pay scale for a market-based pay system involving assessing teacher performance. But now imagine that the same school district goes to great lengths to craft a public image that these kinds of reforms are succeeding and are in the best interests of children. So the district hires this body to write a report and then provides copies of it to the constituents of the school district. Is this going to be an unbiased, scientifically informed report that truly examines the educational worthiness of these reforms? Well, no. And of course, all this public relations stuff is going to cost. Where's the money going to come from? Will the people who are meant to be the target audience for this report know where its funding comes from? Will they get to know, for example, that the context in which this report was written is not too dissimilar to the context in which the tobacco industry selected and paid its own researchers to research its product? And this is particularly important here because it just so happens that at the time this report is released, the school district is having an election for its school board. Now, an election, that sounds democratic. At least, we hope democratic processes are being exercised, right? We especially hope that a school board candidate who might have something useful and critical to offer to a singular reform agenda gets fair and equal representation of her views prior to the election. Maybe the community served by the school district could really benefit from a voice that asks reasonable and critical questions, even if they do go against the prevailing views. But what chance would such a candidate have if, on the run-up to the election, a massive biased public relations effort in the form of a white paper paid for by the district and coming out of the American Enterprise Institute is foisted on the community? No chance. But that could never happen, right? Because we have campaign finance laws that protect us against exactly this kind of thing, right? But Douglas County School District saw it otherwise and did exactly this. And as a result, they were able to elect the school board of their choice. Doesn't sound very democratic, does it? But there's hope. One of those candidates who didn't get a fair shot at the election blew the whistle. Julie Kime, parent, citizen and public servant, took Douglas County School District to court on all of this, and on many of the issues that were raised, she got some justice as well. It was deemed that public institutions should be able to disseminate unbiased information, sure. However, in this case, the district's actions clearly went over the line and violated the Campaign Act. And here's a quote from the judge. The Hess report, that was the report that was written, was not a third-party, unbiased study, and was purchased with public money to influence the outcome of the board election. Unquote. Julie Kime, you are our activist of the week. You are our hero. Your courage and tenacity is an inspiration to all of us. Julie Kime, you have truly busted pencils.
Thanks so much. Gosh, what an introduction. I'm impressed.
The devil's advocate, even though I'm not the devil. Maybe it's just that you're just plain upset that you didn't win the election and that this is just you crying and whining over the fact that you did not win the election.
Well, you know, I do obviously hear that from some of my opponents, but that is absolutely not the case. I was a mom in the school district. I was very, very involved in my kids' schools, have been involved on different boards and things since they were in preschool, and the oldest is now 18. So I've always known what a good education looked like. My kids went to an amazing school district. Douglas County School District used to be amazing. I saw what a great education was. And then I saw these people take over our district and proclaim that things were getting better and they were doing what was best for all students, but that absolutely was not the case. What they were saying was happening and what the reality in the schools was were two totally different things. The schools were being, you know, strangled by money and bad personnel policies and all of these things that were going on in our school district, and our schools were starting to really fall behind, yet the message out, the public relations message out to the community was, everything is great. We are reinventing American education in Douglas County.
What's happening now? Because, you know, you've blown the whistle. They've got off very lightly.
Yes, they are. Actually, they have filed an appeal on this case saying that they did not use public funds and that the report was not intended to influence the election. They have filed their brief. We're actually filing our response to their appeal brief, and we are pointing out that absolutely what the judge decided was supported. In an appeal, all that's actually looked at is whether or not there was sufficient evidence for the judge to decide as she did, and we feel very confident that we have that. However, the district will continue to pursue this. They have said they will continue to appeal as long as they need to. I thankfully have found some wonderful attorneys who are willing to donate their time now after spending about $25,000 on the original complaint. But they continue to use an outside law firm and, you know, rack up a bill in paying it with public dollars.
First, the judge rules that this board illegally used public monies to pay for its own non-third-party biased report to influence the election, and now on appeals is using the same public money to appeal the fact that they were found to be doing things illegally. So now we're racking up the bill at the cost of the citizen. For those in public schools, means that every dollar spent on this appeal is a dollar not going into the classrooms of Douglas County. You were a mom in the district who did their job. You know, you showed up, did some volunteer work. When the reform board got elected and things started going awry, you took on the democratic process and went up as a school board candidate, thinking this was going to be a fair election, hoping you were going to try to make a difference. You didn't win the election, and probably, you know, we're going to move on. But when this came out, you acted.
In my previous life, I was an auditor, a governmental entity auditor, and I knew what was right and wrong and what could public money could be spent for or not spent for. So that's what sort of started me down this path. It really had nothing to do with the election. I actually filed the complaint before the election at a point where we really thought we were going to win. And the election was very close. We did come very close to winning. But I think the important point was I did this with a pure heart and said, is this right? Is it right for us to allow governmental entities to use our funds to direct our beliefs, which aren't necessarily in the best interest of our students? And so anyone can do it. You have to have a passion. We have to do it. No one is going to stand up for us. If you all haven't noticed in public education, there are no saviors anymore except for us at the ground level. We need grassroots efforts to change what's happening in public education.
It's not about waiting for the powerful to make a difference. Right. It's understanding that you, each of us, individually, Julie Keim, any mom, any dad, any student out there, you have the ability to be the education activist of the week. If you know of an education activist who's truly doing something about public education, doing what's right for kids, doing what's right for the community, I want you to make sure that you go to BustedPencils.com, click on Education Activist of the Week, and fill out and nominate your Education Activist of the Week. So just like Julie, we can highlight and speak to the people of America out there that are making all the changes that are necessary. So, Julie, thanks for doing what you do. Let us know how the appeal goes, because we're going to want to talk to you again. Julie Keim, Education Activist of the Week.
Thank you so much. What a great honor, and I will definitely keep you up to date on what's going on.
Nominate your choice for Education Activist of the Week now at BustedPencils.com. 1980, brand new book published called A People's History of the United States, written by an author, Howard Zinn. This book changes everything. It turns history upside down. Howard Zinn specifically states that in this book, he's going to tell history from the point of view of those who lost. Went on, gave prolific speeches throughout his life. Sadly, we lost Howard in January of 2010. Howard was an activist, and people used to give him a hard time for being a historian who actually was an activist. Howard always took the position, though, how can you tell history if you can't tell it from somebody's point of view? You're always going to tell it from a point of view. So he chose it, and he took the idea of being an activist, being very proudly. And so here at Busted Pencils, where we have an Education Activist of the Week, where we're talking about the good things that people are doing to bring back American public education, we want to have our final segment of every show be some feature, some specific little sentence or two that Howard Zinn said to remind us all about what we're doing. We're going to end every show with a moment of Zinn. This week, we're going to hear Matt Damon reading from a speech Howard Zinn gave, a little bit about civil disobedience. Matt and our moment of Zinn.
You're saying our problem is civil disobedience. That is not our problem. Our problem is civil obedience.
Looking for Busted Pencils? Well, get out of your desk and make sure you go to Facebook.com/BustedPencils or check us out on Twitter at Busted Pencils. Keep up with everything that's going on in the Busted Pencils world. Make sure you follow us on the web at BustedPencils.com. Thanks for listening.